My name is Parrish Kelly. I'm 63 years old. Today is July 20, 2008. We are in Buffalo, New York, and I'm here interviewing my mother, Dorothea Kelly. Now you say your name.
No?
Yes, you say your name.
My name is Dorothea Kelly.
Your age?
And my age is 102.
And today is?
Today is July 20, 2008.
And you're in the city?
And I am now in the city of Buffalo, New York.
And your relationship to me?
And my relationship to Parrish is mother.
All right, so now we start. I wanted to ask you first about your parents.
My
who they were.
My parents?
Yes. Say who they were.
My mother was named Evelyn, and I was her third child. My father was George Henry Nolte, and he was a businessman. And they had been married. They had two sons already, and I was the first girl.
Now, who did your father work for? Do you remember the name?
Yes. In the beginning, when he and my mother were first married, he was in the Boston Stock Exchange. Later on, when we moved to New York, when I moved, or when they moved, he went to Flint and Company.
And who was the most famous client of the Flint and Company that your father went and scouted for?
Oh, yes, the brothers, the Wright brothers, who had invented an airplane.
And he was the one that the Flint Company sent to Dayton, Ohio, I think, wasn't it?
Yes, so I think it was Dayton.
He came back.
But then they told him that because they had gotten so well known, they were being asked to go to France, which they did do, taking the one machine they had already finished, which would fly, taking it over on a boat, I guess.
I remember your showing us photographs, your family
photographs. Oh, yes.
On that trip.
Somewhere, I don't know where they are now, I had quite a number of them. I suppose my father must have known a good photographer.
Now, your mother was, she studied Christian Science with Mary Baker Eddy, didn't she?
No, I don't think so.
I thought you told me once that she had actually been a student.
She studied with someone who had been involved with Mary Baker Eddy, and she was interested in Christian Science. And I think for the rest of her life, from a young girl on, she was always a Christian scientist and went to the church on Sundays, always, and Wednesday nights.
Didn't one of her sisters have a letter from Mary Baker Eddy?
Yes. I still have it. A letter from Mary Baker Eddy to her, to my Aunt Charlotte, who was a well-known cellist in Boston.
Now, even though your parents were both from Massachusetts, your earliest memories are really from New York.
Well, yes. Most of them, that's true. And later on, of course, in Weston, which was near Boston.
But what happened on your sixth birthday?
Oh, I've got a lot of things there. First of all, as a lot of little girls think they wanted to dress up like a princess, so I wanted to do that. And I wanted my little sister, who was 27 months younger than I, to be my bridesmaid. And then my older brother, I had two older brothers. This was a one who was about 12 or 13, I think. He was to be the groom, but he didn't like that idea. He didn't want to be a groom. In the meantime, I had been telling my father some of this, and he was very upset because on the 15th, around the 14th or 15th of April, 1912, the Titanic sank. And my father was so in love with all these big liners. Whenever his business took him, he would go on one of the, usually getting to know the captain. And would sit at the captain's table for meals, and he loved boats. And when he heard that the new Titanic on its maiden voyage to the United States had hit an iceberg and sank, causing hundreds of people's deaths, it was a tragedy. And the poor man, of course, I was only a little girl, so I didn't know much about comforting grown-ups. But I'm sure I would have if I had known how.
It was probably upsetting to you as well.
Oh, of course, because I had hoped that someday my father would take me on the Titanic, which was considered the biggest and most beautiful boat on the waters.
Now, you never knew your grandfather, your mother's father, but
no.
We have a letter from him when he was in the Civil War. And your mother also had a half-brother who died in the Civil War, didn't he?
Yes, that's true. I don't, right now, my memory's clogged up with, I don't think of that. Let me tell, my mother's name was White, and her father was Jason White. That's right. That's why my older son is named Jason. Well, Jason had two boys from his first wife, and one of the boys had heard about finding gold in California. So somehow...
Your grandfather, Jason.
Yes, my grandfather. So, the oldest boy, somehow, I don't know how, got to California. Probably going with one of many
ships.
Ships, yes. And I came back a year later with pockets supposedly full of gold. And in the meantime, my grandfather had decided that he wanted to bring back his son from California and had started out on another boat. And in those days, there was no canal, of course. So they had to go down under the United States.
Around the bottom of South America.
That's right, the bottom of South America. And they thought, when they got there and they passed my grandfather, call out the name of his son. And sure enough, there was the son. And the son said, "I'm through with looking for gold. Let's go home." And so he jumped into a boat and immediately joined his father.
Well, I want to ask about your childhood, too. Your childhood.
Oh, all right.
You spent a few months with your family in Argentina.
Oh, yes. It was pretty close to a year. Yes, it was a long time. And I loved it. I didn't speak any Spanish. But when I would go into the kitchen, and my mother had hired a Spanish cook, I could indicate what I wanted to eat. And she was always glad to help kids. So,
when you came back from Argentina, you stopped to see the Panama Canal, right?
Oh, indeed. In fact, I was at the bottom of one of the great parts of the canal, and I could look up and see those high walls that the water would soon be filling.
One of the locks. It was before it was filled with water.
That's right. They had already started one of them. It is made in sections, you understand. Mm-hmm. At least it was then, I suppose it is now. In fact, recently I was on a boat that went through the canal, and they're getting the same water from the place they got in those days to fill the canal.
Now, you never went to school when you were a child, except for 1 year.
I went 1 year in Western Massachusetts to the local school. Yes, I should have been in the ninth, 9-year-old, that would be fourth grade, but my mother thought I should go in the third grade. And I was way ahead, of course. So the thing is, I became teacher's pet because I knew too much, you see. It's a bad situation, very bad.
Well, why didn't you go to a public school like most kids of that time and today?
Well, my mother had strange ideas. She was a beautiful woman who had everything in life. But she had ideas, and one was Christian Science was a great religion, and all her life, from the time she was 22 or 23, she was a Christian Scientist.
And so how did that keep you out of school?
Well, she didn't think they would be teaching the right thing. Now, when I finished my third grade,
you didn't go back to school again.
No, I didn't go back to school for a couple of years.
But you did study music.
Oh, from the very beginning, from the time I was 6 years old, I was already starting the piano, and at the age of 8, my mother had a violin teacher come, and they got me a fiddle, and so I studied violin too, and my little sister, who was 27 months younger than I, studied the cello. And she was only 6 when she started. Well, let's see. I mixed up on the ages. I started at 6, and my sister didn't start until she was 6, which, of course, 2 years later, more or less.
But by the time you were 21, you were a pretty good violinist and pianist, too, for that matter.
Oh, well, by that time, yes. That's a long way you've skipped.
Well, of course, but you did, by that time, your family were living in New York City.
Yes, we had moved from Boston about about 1919, somewhere along there, because George, my oldest brother, was in the army, and he was in France. And so my mother knew that he would come back, hoping he would come back to New York. Plus the fact that my father's business in the Boston Stock Exchange had gone up the spout, as you might say. It was, in fact, it was just the time I was born. It was in 1906 that the Boston Stock Exchange stopped operating. And my father's business with the stock exchange was no longer in existence. And so he moved to New York. And on the way in Connecticut, Greenwich, I was born.
But you were, to get back to your musical studies.
Oh.
You met some famous people in New York.
Oh, yes. When I was older, I'd been studying violin for several years with a wonderful local teacher, Barbara Werner. And she had studied in Paris with Enesco, the wonderful, wonderful composer.
George Enesco, the Romanian.
Romania, yeah. He was from Romania. He had, let's see.
And you met him.
Oh, I met him. Not only that, I was almost 14 by that time. More than that, he kissed my hand when he met me because I was with his former pupil, Barbara Werner.
Later you got to know Albert Stessel, the conductor of the New York
Orchestra.
Oh, well,
yes, my mother knew his wife, had known her for many years. Anyway, I met him and studied with him as a violinist. And when he found out that I could write music, and clearly and well, he asked me to do a lot of copying of the arrangements he made in piano, violin, cello, all kinds of musical ways. So I worked hard for several times after I got through with my lessons, and I studied with him, I think, 3 years.
But did you want to play in an orchestra?
Well, this is when I went to New York University. They had a school orchestra there, and I played in that, of course. And, in fact, I got to be soloist.
That was at, actually, was that the Juilliard School?
No, it was at New York University, Washington Square College.
When did you study at Juilliard?
1923. Wait a minute. I'm not clear on this. When I was 23, and it would have been 1930. No. Wait a minute. Oops. 39.
Well, let's go back to Albert Stessel. Did he teach at Juilliard?
Later on he did, yes. But he wasn't when I was working with him, it seems to me. Now, I want to get these dates right. Yes, 39.
39 was much later. I'm asking when you were in New York. And you first, for example, had the opportunity to come to Chautauqua. That would have been in 1927.
That's correct.
When you were 21.
That's right.
Had you been studying at Juilliard then?
No. I had been working with Barbara Werner.
Oh.
And had met Enesco and all of that part.
But you switched from the violin
yes,
to the viola.
To the viola.
Why did you switch?
Well, I liked the sound of it. And that was when I was at Juilliard. And they didn't have enough violas in the orchestra there. So I switched for that. Bought a pretty good viola. And I discovered that I really loved it much better than the violin. And I was stuck with it for the rest of my life, tell you.
Did you try to play in one of the major orchestras like the New York Philharmonic?
Oh, no, because I didn't think they'd accept me. But I did get a full scholarship at Juilliard, and I did study there for 5 years, and not on viola, but in composition, because I really had a feeling that I wanted to be a composer. And I wrote a number of compositions for piano, and, well, one was for piano and violin. That was the Sonatina. And these were played by the students at some of the concerts there. And now, those days, the Juilliard was entirely scholarship, and the number of people, and no, not people, what am I trying to say?
Students,
yes. We're only approximately 200. What is now such an enormous operation was then just a small group of scholarship. I never, in the 5 years that I was at Juilliard, and they were in several different places, the classes, my first class with them in 1939. 29, yes. Thank you for correcting me.
But in 1927, you were sent to Chautauqua.
Yes, in the summer.
In the summer, to be the music critic.
Music critic of the orchestra there. And
well, you were.
I continued that job for 5 years. In the meantime, marrying the son of the president of Chautauqua.
Arthur Bester.
Arthur Bester, Jr. Yes, and I was married to him until 39. And that was the summer that I went to France to study at Fontainebleau.
Did you have classes with Nadia Boulanger at Fontainebleau?
Oh, yes. And she taught me privately, too. She gave me, and she was really charming person. She was at her height, I think, because she was about 50 years old in those days. And I know people who studied with her much later, but she wasn't as smart and clever as she was. And we had fun after she would get through with the work which I had written. She would ask, she'd say, let's speak conversational. By the way, she spoke English with me rather than French, but she was, she spoke both languages perfectly. And I remember she would say, tell me about this person named Esther.
Which Esther? John Jacob Astor went down to the Titanic.
No, no. Oh, he did. That's
interesting. Well, there was an Astor in the Titanic.
No. This is, I don't remember her first name. She was an actress.
Mary Astor, maybe.
Yeah. All right, whoever. But they said I looked like her. I don't know that I did, but that's what some people said.
I thought people said you looked like Garbo.
Oh, now you've got it. Yes, I think you have got it. Garbo, that's the one. It wasn't the Astor. I'm mixed up.
Mary Astor was in The Maltese Falcon with Humphrey Bogart, I think.
Oh, please forgive me. I really did mix that up. No, it was Garbo, of course. I admired Garbo.
Well, what happened at the end of your summer at Fontainebleau? Important events in the world. Right?
Yes, all right. Well, we got through classes at Fontainebleau long about the end of July. End of August, excuse me. And I went back to France. I had my ticket home on the new, beautiful Mauritania.
But you stayed in Paris.
And so
until
I...
September.
And so, well, yes. And I was... going back and forth over the streets, just enjoying Paris, as always. And on 3rd of September, the war between Germany and France and England, the United States?
Not yet.
Thank you. But
England and France were at war with Germany.
So everything went to pot because all the people, the men who ran the trolleys and the subways and the taxi cabs were all had to be lined up at a place where they were made soldiers.
Drafted,
yes. Thank you. For helping me, I do forget the words.
But you did get on the boat and go back.
Oh, well, that was an adventure in itself. I had to carry all of my belongings, including a viola, my suitcases, my typewriter, all that. I somehow strapped them together with my belt and dragged them a lot. And I got down to the wharf where I could take a boat to Great Britain to get a boat back to the United States because everything in France had just closed down tight.
But you said that the ambassador to Great Britain came on the boat. Didn't he?
Oh, yes.
Joseph Kennedy.
That is correct. But let me tell you about a little more about the boat. When I was on my way, carting all this stuff on a line for the belt, with the belt to pulling it, I met a group of American soldiers. And oh, were they sweet. They were wonderful. They said, here, let us carry your stuff. And they did. And they got me to the wharf, and I took the ferry boat across to England. It's not far, you know. But it was dangerous, because everybody said that the Germans had already put bombs in the water.
Mines.
Yeah. But I got through all right, no problem. got out, and when I arrived at where is it?
New York?
No, I'm still in England.
Southampton.
Well, I guess that'll do. Everybody was looking for porters to carry their luggage, and there weren't any because they'd all gone to report to the war, of course. So we all had to carry our own stuff. And I was used to it, so I got mine on all right. But Joseph Kennedy was there, and he was coming back to the United States.
Or sending his family, at any rate.
Well, yes. And the oldest boy, became president.
Well, he was Jack Kennedy actually flew back on a plane, but the rest of the family were there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the ambassador said that he would put all of his family on the ship, so it would be. He knew it was safe, since he was putting his family on the ship.
That's right.
Well, then when you came back and you were in New York again, you got a chance for a regular full-time job in Buffalo.
Well, the way I got that, I went and talked to the president of Juilliard, who was a friend because he was at Chautauqua in the summertime in an official position. And I told him I would like a job. He offered me this Buffalo working out of the museum.
The Museum of Science.
Science, yes. And I had my own office.
What was your title?
Well, I was a curator of art, I think, is what they call it. Maybe they...
Of music? Mm. Curator of music?
Art and music.
Okay.
No, the art was important.
Art too.
A lot of the day, of each day, I spent with photographs which were of a great art, which went around to all the public schools. It was a good job. It was a nice job. And after a while, I decided to play in the symphony in Buffalo, which I did, and that took only the afternoons when they had rehearsals. Oh, no, it was mornings, I guess. And half of the day I spent at the museum, and the other half I was in the orchestra. And the half that I was not at the museum, I hired a wonderful woman who was willing to do the morning part, so that we had somebody full-time in that department.
Well, you also met your second husband, my father.
Oh, yes. But that was a bit later. In the meantime, I wanted to bring up the fact that I met this wonderful woman named Anya Antik, who was a Russian woman who taught eurythmics. And I immediately hired her for the museum, and she taught every Saturday. She had a class in eurythmics for young children. And it's a very good thing for the young kids to learn how to move in dance form. And she played Anya played the piano very well, and she became a fast friend of mine. She was wonderful. So.
But you also ran managed the Buffalo Chamber Music Society, too, didn't you?
Oh, yes. That was a little bit later. I was in Buffalo, actually, all of 12 years. In 1941, at the very end of 41, almost Christmas, I met delightful man named Bart Kelly, Bartram Kelly. And we met at an evening in one of the suburbs where...
You were both playing in a small musical group.
Yes, well, we were playing in a musical group, and the man who had the house was the Baird.
Cameron Baird?
Cameron Baird. And he loved music. He was a good musician himself. And we met, and 6 weeks later, after he came to my house to visit, and we had supper together, and several other ways in which we got to know each other. So 6 weeks later, we got married.
That was a pretty short time.
Oh, it was a very short time. But then I had been married once before, so I was ready. I was grown up, if you might say.
Well, did you know before you married him, did you know all of the people you knew in common and the things you had in common, like the fact that your father was connected with the Wright brothers?
Oh, of course, we talked. We talked bushels. And, of course, I knew all of his friends, and Bart was connected with the
Bell Aircraft.
Oh, well, that came later.
Well, that's why he was there. Working at Bell.
That's why he was in Buffalo. It was because of that.
You must have told him that your father was connected with the Wright brothers when you knew that he was working for Bell Aircraft.
Oh, I may have. I don't know. I don't remember what I told him. I talked, and he talked, and that's why we got married, so we do it together. And thank God he was with me 56 and a half years after we got married on, March 7th, 1942.
That, I remember the wedding. We have a little bit of home movie of your wedding. And your mother was there.
My mother and my sister.
Sister. And his college roommate.
I don't think my brother was there.
No.
No.
He's not in the movie.
No, that's right. Well, that's when Bart and I got married.
Well, we're almost halfway through your life, and we're completely out of time now.
Oh, dear. Well, that's all right with me.
We'll have to skip the move to Texas with the aircraft company. And you're being the manager of the Dallas Chamber Music Society. And
oh, yes.
Playing in the
all
Dallas
of that.
Symphony.
How much time do I have?
We have to wrap it up now.
The okay. Well, life in Texas has been very helpful. Not until I got started, but the first year or two, when I was playing in the orchestra, that was about all I had. And then it began to get much better. So I'm very happy where I am now in Dallas. Was that all right?
It would be nice if we could go on for another hour, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think it would. And you're so patient. And you remember so much, and I'm so very grateful to you. Thank you for it all.
Well, thank you. Thank you for everything.
All right. Bye-bye.